I think at this point, we've all acted that Google is probably never going to be the same easy traffic source it's always been to a lot of people. And I don't think it's dead like many people do, and we will still be using it, but you're probably not going to be able to solely rely on Google traffic for your online business anymore if that's what you've been doing so far. I'm not going to spend too long on that topic. We've discussed it at length with our guest Lily Ray in our previous episode, so go check this episode if you've missed it out. But the question a lot of people are now asking is, what do we do now? And I've been observing the industry, and it's really interesting to see people going in different directions right now and try things they probably should have tried earlier on, things like Facebook pages, Pinterest, email lists, etc. And looking at all of these, what I can tell you is that nothing is a one-to-one replacement to Google search. And while Bing is currently growing a fair bit in market share, it will probably never come even close to what Google used to be to many people 6 months ago, and I don't think I would be chasing for that. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about one of the things that we are doing to diversify away from Google traffic, and that is Meta ads. As I'm recording this, we're already spending 6 figures per year on ads on Meta, and that budget has been growing a lot faster lately as we've been scaling up cold traffic ads aggressively in the past few months. And from doing this, we generally get a 2-5 ROAS, which stands for return on ad spend, which in plain English means for a dollar spent, we get $2 to $5 back. Now, we don't build Facebook pages like a lot of niche site builders are trying to do right now. We just sell stuff and build sales funnels, because one of the things that got incredibly good with ads in the past year is their ability to drive conversions, which you completely miss on when you're buying likes. And yes, for a lot of people, doing this means doing something a bit different than just posting on a blog. It means creating products, creating sales pages, creating marketing material, and so on. But it's a method that I've been able to help several Platinum members also adopt in the past few months through DMs and discussions, and some of them are already doing pretty good with it. And running your own products really opens up many new traffic sources beyond ads and really solve the traffic problem. So in this episode, we'll show you exactly how we plan and build a funnel, how we angle our ads, how we target them, how much money we spend, and a lot of little details for those of you who are interested in taking action. And for those of you who are not fully convinced yet, we'll also talk about why we think it's one of the safest ways to go for traffic and a bunch of other high-level debates. So if you're trying to decide whether this is a direction you should consider, you'll probably find something valuable here. But before all of that, I need to take a second to thank today's episode sponsor, Search Intelligence. Search Intelligence is a premier digital PR agency that you should be considering using if you're looking to get news backlinks back to your website. We'll tell you more about them a little bit later in the episode, but for now, let's get started.
Welcome to the Authority Hacker Podcast. And now your hosts, Gail Breton and Mark Webster.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Authority Hacker Podcast. If you're new to the show, my name is Gail Breton and I am with my co-founder Mark, and we've been building online businesses for the past 14 years at this point. We've built sites that we've sold, we've built agencies, we built all of that. And if you're interested in that, don't forget to subscribe. You can listen to this podcast on all the podcast platforms and on youtube.com/authorityhacker. And you can find all the links in the show notes if you want. How's it going, Mark?
It's going good, Gail. It's going very good. I'm excited to talk about something a little bit different
than the Google updates.
Something a little important nonetheless for business owners. That's Facebook ads.
Yeah, it's like, look, we need to talk about this in the context of what's happening right now, right? A lot of people who are listening to us have relied heavily on Google traffic because we've talked a lot about it, because we've used a lot of Google traffic.
Not just heavily, have relied exclusively on Google, 100%. Yeah.
Google traffic is harder to come by with the recent updates. Let's just say that. Like, check my podcast with Lily Ray that I've done last week. We've talked about 2 weeks ago. We talked a lot about the changes. And the thing is, it's probably a good time for people to explore new options right now and think about different things. And we wanted to take some time to talk about something we do, which is Facebook ads, right? So I said it in a pre-intro, but since 2021, I think we spent £250,000, so a little bit over $313,000 when I checked, something like this, on Facebook ads as a publisher. So I know if you're a big e-com, it's some money, but it's not that crazy. But for someone who doesn't run an e-com store, it's quite a bit already. And we've learned a few things doing that. And so the point of this podcast is to share the things we've learned while putting them into the context of this new reality. A lot of people that are building websites are being put in right now, which is trying to find solutions and ways to live with less Google traffic. And it's one of the things that I've seen, like actually Facebook are getting a little bit of popularity right now, but in a different way than we use it. So
It's people basically buying likes to Facebook pages so that they can then have some followers. They post some stuff and then they put some links, usually in the comments these days, like, because if you put a link on the Facebook page post, it actually gets very little reach. And the goal is to get traffic back to your site, and people still monetize with essentially ads, affiliates, extra, but mostly ads, because it's hard to get buying intent from Facebook pages. It's a little bit more clickbaity, a bit less long content than SEO content. That kind of, like, the topics are a little bit more around trending topics rather than evergreen keywords, etc. But it's very much the same old formula as people used to do with Google, basically, like producing some content, slapping some ads on it, trying to make money from it. I personally think if things are changing, it's probably a good time to rethink that formula as well.
It's not even so much that it's a good time to rethink the formula. It's always been a good time to rethink that formula.
But I think these people who've just been doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of crux of the issue. For the last 10 years, the optimal play was to push past that and to build your own products and create a true following, build a brand, you know, all the stuff people tell you to do, but never really explain particularly well how to. It's always been a great idea to do that. And the people making the most money online have all done that.
But you could make enough money, like people were happy enough, just essentially publishing SEO content, getting traffic and getting by with that. And I think that's why a lot of people kind of stopped there, because it was low effort, right?
Yeah, low effort. You know, you didn't have to put yourself forward. It was pretty scalable. You could have other people do all of the work. Think of content creation, link building. You didn't have to lift a finger yourself. You could just sit on the beach sipping Mai Tais and life was good. Until it wasn't. Until things slowly started to change. And it suddenly became a situation. We're suddenly in a situation where actually, if you want to do really well, then you have to
start doing
those uncomfortable, awkward things and building something more than, you know, just a thin content site that can be replicated by anyone else with an AI tool.
My vision of, like, the market right now is it's kind of like two paths in front of people that they're going to have to pick if they want to do well. And one side is stay a content creator. But if you're going to be a content creator, I'm not just talking about blogging. Like, blogging alone, if you are a small site, it's quite difficult to generate traffic to it at this point if you, like, just do that. But if you on YouTube, if you're on Instagram, if you do short form videos, if you run a newsletter, these kind of things, and you can essentially get brands to sponsor you. Like, it's not just like putting Mediavine ads on your site or whatever. It's like, you know, making deals with brands, like this podcast is sponsored, for example. And so, like, doing things like that, you can go the route of being a content creator, not necessarily having a product. And that's your company. It's just you create content and then you slap someone else's company on it. You get paid for it. And it's through affiliates or through sponsorship deals. The second way is to essentially be a real business, is to actually sell something. And then a lot of avenues for traffic open up as you sell something. That's really going to be the main topic of today's podcast, is the business route, where you create a product and you sell something. And so things like Facebook ads open up, things like Google ads open up, things like recruiting affiliates that have an email list, for example, open up. And, like, traffic sorts itself out by changing your business model, rather than running after new traffic sources without changing what's on your site, basically. And so I really think most people who want to do well, at least medium to long term, are going to have to pick one of these two paths. Like, am I a content creator? And then I need to invest in these other platforms, be on social media, show my face, have a newsletter, these kind of things. Or am I a business? And in which case, what's your product? And is it a good product? And do people want it and like it? And if you become a business, it will potentially, long-term, I think, solve your Google problems, because Google ranks businesses, you know?
You know, not only like the business model type situation, but, you know, things like branded search. You know, when people start searching for your business name, then that's a positive signal. And, you know, there's a lot of people are saying that that's, you know, protecting a lot of people from getting hit by updates and stuff. So it's almost like, it's almost like the less you do certain parts of SEO and the more you focus on the other bit, the more your SEO is kind of indirectly helped by that.
I mean, look at us, right? It's like, we're not a huge company. We did not collapse from the Google updates. Like, we lost a little bit of traffic here and there, new snippets, etc. It's like, I think we're minus 10-15% right now, something like this, compared to before it started. So it's like, it's not too bad. If you check our site in Ahrefs, it's pretty much flat. It's mostly lost to snippets, really. And I think it's because we have products, basically, and because there's brand search associated with that, etc. Like, I don't think it's like there are blogs that create content maybe like close enough to the content we have on our side that have completely collapsed at this point. Like, fingers crossed it doesn't happen before I publish the podcast, right? I'm not saying that, but I'm saying like our example, I think, backs this up. And it's actually something that we've told people to do for a long time, right? It's like, if you actually go check like our like get started page on Authority Hacker, you have stage one, stage two, stage three authority sites. And the affiliate site part of it is really just stage one. It's really like get started. A lot of people decided to stick to it because essentially it made them more money than jumping on stage two and three very often.
It's not that it made them more money. It's just that it was easier to repeatedly do it and kind of scale it without getting too involved yourself.
Yeah, I guess. It's like it was less, you retained more freedom, can we say that, by doing that in a way? But the trade-off is you traded that off for instability. You relied on one platform and you relied on often like one or two types of content, and these things have been shaken off a lot lately with the updates, and so we do that. But like stage two has always been like build an audience and sell them affiliate, high-paying affiliate offers, basically. And stage three was like have your own product and do very much what we're going to talk about today. So it's like the model still holds, but like probably things come a lot sooner now in terms of like having your own product, etc. And we have several members that have done that, right? It's like I mean, Kevin Epic Gardening is probably like one of the best examples. He's kind of like the Jamie Oliver of gardening at this point. I predicted it and it's happening, so I'm pretty happy for him. But check him out. We have a podcast with him. He got like an 8-figure investment. His company is skyrocketing. He started with SEO. He got big from social media because SEO kind of bought his time back. And then he launched a product monetizing this audience. And now he's like, he has a really, really successful e-com and multiple companies, etc. We have a friend who had the same with a VPN affiliate site. He used to rank very well for VPN keywords. And he decided to launch his own VPN company and like 10x the money he made from doing that, basically. We have done that also many times and many, many years ago. If you remember Health Ambition a long time ago, we have case studies on taking blog posts that rank for affiliate queries, launching our own versions of the product, using Facebook ads as well. I think we talked about Facebook ads back then. It's changed a lot since then. It's a lot easier, so we'll update that in this podcast. And like 10xing the revenue from the blog traffic because we owned the offer and we were selling the product. So
we did a blog post on Authority Hacker about building that funnel. It was like basically overnight made $2,500 a month.
From one blog post, yeah.
Yeah. And like the product we made was just basically all of the blog posts put together with a few words, like packaged up in an ebook. It was really nothing special. It was pretty poor actually by our standards now. So
yeah, I wouldn't be happy to sell that right now, to be honest. So yeah, it's like basically I think the situation kind of flipped at this point where it's easier to build the business part than to generate lots of traffic because getting traffic is more challenging now from search, basically. The thing as well is like, it's not just search that has changed, right? It's like, there's also other opportunities that have opened up. So personally, I'm quite hyped up by the way social media works right now compared to how it used to work. So maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the reach your content would get was very, very dependent on how many followers you have, right? If you have no followers, you jump on the platform, doesn't matter how good your content is, very few people would see it. Nowadays, like, because TikTok did so well, like every social platform has evolved to the point where you can post content and if it gets engagement, they will distribute it well beyond your following. And so it's quite easy to get, like, that's why Facebook pages are working for a lot of people right now, because essentially when a post does well, the Facebook just keeps pushing it because it drives engagement for them, shows more, it creates more ad impressions for them, and therefore they do that. And
no, just sort of on that, like, so some people think that Mr. Beast gets a lot of views because he has a lot of subscribers.
It doesn't matter.
But it's the other way around. He has a lot of subscribers because he makes each video is really good. It gets pushed, and then people subscribe because of that. But if he were to start a brand new account and make the same videos, as well, but it would get really big really quickly.
It's nice because it's like, there's a lot less wait time between you starting and you performing to the level of the quality of your content, basically, on social media.
You had a good word for this. You called it the TikTokification of social media. I think that's a good way to describe it. It was ever since TikTok released the sort of short form video content in the flick through way, and you could just go from, you know, first video get tens of millions of views if it was a good video. Other platforms they've changed, they've adapted, and that's how a lot of them are working.
I mean, on Twitter or LinkedIn, like when I make a good post, like I get more reach than people that make bad posts with 200,000 followers, even though I don't have this amount of followers. So it's like, yeah, it's nice. Like you feel rewarded for making good organic content. And the third thing that has changed, I think, in the environment that is going to be completely related to what we're going to talk about today is ad platforms have become incredibly good at finding customers for you. Customers. I mean, you can do it for email subscribers, but it's so good. You shouldn't even bother, basically. You should literally push offers right away. And that's kind of like, I have kind of a theory that I was talking about with Madigity the other day, actually, where my theory was like, you know, it's like we track our value per lead, right? And it's like, I was looking at our value per lead from SEO, even though we were getting the same traffic, same amount of opt-ins, etc. The value per lead has consistently decreased from SEO in the last 2 years. I think it's like some pages, it's one page I was looking at that was getting lots of traffic. It went from like $1.91 per lead to like $1.27 or something like this. So it's a pretty significant percentage, especially because you're talking of thousands of email subscribers. So it's like, it's pretty relevant statistically. And my guess is that these platforms are so good at finding the customers at this point that they can tell who's going to convert and not convert based on your usage behavior of the platform. And when you're someone that's likely to convert, they're more likely to show more ads to you. So like, I can imagine Google shows like 5 ads to someone who, before the organic results, to someone who's likely to buy a service, and shows 1 or 2 ads or no ads to someone who's not likely to buy a service. And as a result, if you rely on organic traffic to get your traffic, essentially the value of that traffic, even though the traffic may be the same, is actually decreasing because the ad platform has sucked up all the people that were going to convert to ads, basically. Because, and I think that's what we see on the ad side. On the ad side, like, our value per visitor is increasing massively because these platforms are getting so good. And the SEO side, it's like a slope decreasing. I don't know if it's because the results are worse as well. Maybe that's a lack of relevance. But my theory is that ad platforms are just getting better at capturing the right people.
And just to be clear here, we're not saying abandon SEO, no. Just do ads. And
it's instead. Still money, it's, right?
It's very valuable. And as we'll talk about later, having a lot of SEO traffic can actually really help your ads when you do things like retargeting. It's very, very powerful. But it's more the notion that you have to be open to having not just one traffic source and having different channels. And the way to do that profitably and effectively in the long run, we believe, is running your own product, your own offer.
It's like SEO was so good before, you could rely just on it. Like I said, 5 years ago, it was fine. Now it's kind of like leveled off with other platforms. The other platforms have gone up a bit, so there's more opportunities on this end. And SEO has gone down a bit. So it's still one of the best traffic sources, but there's so many other opportunities and it got a bit harder.
To put this into perspective as to why and how social media platforms are so good at telling what you would buy or not. Do you remember, Gail, the Cambridge Analytica scandal? It was a big sort of data breach type thing for 2016 elections, I believe it was. And they stole or they harvested a bunch of data from these kind of Facebook apps. And they were able to tell to like a 90-something percent accuracy how you were going to vote based on 6 pages you would like on Facebook, just 6. So if they knew 6 things, they could tell very accurately how you're going to vote. Now, fast forward to today and think how much data they have because of this short form video. It's like every time, you know, you watch a reel go through 2 or 3 times, or, you know, you pause at a section or you flick quickly to the next one when it doesn't influence you, like they're collecting data.
Even the slight pause, you know, you scroll and you stop for a second before you scroll to the next one and you go, like they actually use that. It's like, it's great. I can see.
And this is how they show you content that you've never subscribed to, never liked the page. They just kind of know what you're interested
in. That's so smart.
Even if you're not really that aware yourself that you're interested in it, but you just find yourself watching more and more of it. If you found that happening to you, that's because these platforms have so much data. And of course, they're going to use that to try and sell you stuff because, you know, their product is, you are their product, and they make their money through ads.
They make their money through people like us giving them money to find customers, basically. And that's what we're going to talk about now. Let's jump onto the main topic. We spend over $100,000 per year on Facebook ads, and it's growing quite a bit, right?
That number is growing rapidly because the targeting has improved, and we've been able to make cold traffic ads, which are a lot more scalable, profitable recently.
Yeah, and quite a few times, like we've done quite okay. So we don't grow Facebook pages. We send traffic directly to a sales page to buy something. basically.
Yep.
And that's kind of like the difference. My point of view on Facebook pages is it seems to be working very well right now. I see a lot of good case studies, but it makes me very nervous as well because I see a lot of fake AI images being shared on them and potentially fake news around the election period that is coming up very soon are going to be shared through these pages. And I would be very surprised if Facebook did not nuke the reach of Facebook pages, at least around the election period, because of that risk.
We made a video of this on the Authority Hacker News channel about the rise of AI images and how older people are being fooled.
It's a bit of a problem, yeah.
It's a real problem. But for you, dear viewer, the real problem is over-reliance on one platform, especially something like Facebook. Organic, yeah, for groups, for pages. People had spent lots and lots of money getting likes to their pages before to promote stuff to their audience. And then Facebook was just like, well, we're not going to show your content to your audience unless you buy an ad directly to it. So they've done this before. I think kind of coming from the background we do, playing a lot of video games, you see the developers, they'll change the meta and everything changes and you have to kind of adapt.
Change the meta, good point.
We're kind of used to that. But like a lot of people aren't. And if you build your business solely and exclusively on one of these platforms, it can hurt if something changes overnight.
No, people will make the argument, oh, but your ad stuff is the same. Not exactly, because we get the money back right away, basically. So it's like when people buy something, like that's it. Like we made a profit. We don't have to build an asset and then count on it to reach people for a certain amount of time to get the money back. Like the accounts show positive ROAS most of the time.
And the second is that our incentives and Meta, Facebook's incentives, are aligned. Like, they want us to do well, so we spend more money. Like, they're going to defend our ability to run ads profitably on their platforms for as long as possible. So it's not going to last forever. Like, in 100 years, I'm sure it'll all be very different. But, you know, they've got your back more than they do with sending you free traffic.
I think it's one of the best defense against AI as well. Like, it's like these platforms are going to try to protect their main earner, which is their ad platform. So if you learn how to make these ad platforms work for you, in essence, you count on them to fight for you against big changes coming to the industry as information flows differently on the internet, basically. So it's like, I'm excited for paid traffic for that as well, because it's something that I think is very complementary to SEO and is more stable because your incentives are aligned with these platforms. Okay, let's talk about what we do exactly. So actually, we got started with ads by going to a real life mastermind that we have with several friends. They almost all run Facebook ads to offer in that mastermind. So we were kind of like the odd ones. We're kind of like the SEO guys of that group of nobody else doing SEO. A lot of them picked up a lot of stuff from us, but we also picked up a lot of stuff from them. One example of such a site that was in this mastermind is iPhonePhotographyschool.com. So you can go check them out. They run incredible ads. They have incredible courses on how to take photos with your iPhone. So to give you an example of a company that does that well, that is a cool angle. And it's not just online marketing like we do, etc. Actually, we were the only online marketing people in that mastermind. There were people who did all sorts of things in there. Let's talk about how we structure that. How do you make it work? And since Mark runs most of it, I'm going to let you talk and I'm just going to try to challenge you, basically.
Sure.
And now a quick word from the sponsor of today's episode.
How much do you think this digital PR campaign is worth? Wait just 1 minute before you answer. Watch as we hijack the news. We tell you Swift and Barbie to get you the links. Now we can take this data set from ONS and paste it right into your emails to get you the links. Now how much do you think this campaign is worth? Don't answer. Wait until you see Bloomberg, BBC, Forbes, top tier national and regional news outlets, reactive PR, data PR, expert commentary, over 70 team members at your disposal. This product is so hot, I need a fan! And then listen to what campaigns we do at no extra charge. Gain character wages, bananas and sleep, best dates for dogs, luckiest UK areas, and many more. All for just how much did you guess? 10,000? 20,000? Even more? No! It's just £5,500. That's right. It's £5,500. It's an incredible value, but it's true. It's digital PR from Search Intelligence. Order today, P.O. Box, searchintelligence.co.uk, except B2B clients.
And now, back to the interview.
Okay, so I think we should start by talking about the offer, the thing you're selling, your product, because you can't sell anything in this way, especially when it comes to digital products or courses. You need to be quite specific in how you're doing this. So first and foremost, and we talk about this a lot when it comes to sort of product creation, product ideas, is the idea that in every niche, there are going to be things which are exciting and interesting to your audience that they're ready to spend money quickly on. And there are going to be those topics which are, let's say, people are not going to get out of bed for them. They're not that motivated. For us, it would be the case that if we sell something to do with link building, to do with AI, people are very interested. They want to hear more. If we come out and say, hey guys, we're releasing a Google Analytics 4 course, like, we'll sell a few, but it's not going to be that interesting. So make sure that whatever it is you are selling and producing is in the kind of sector of your industry that's appealing and interesting.
One way to know that is to go on the subreddit for your topic and see what people are asking about again and again and again. Usually that's how we know what is hot, like whatever community, but subreddit or Facebook groups or whatever you want.
And a couple of ways we did this in the beginning was, we had a lot of traffic through SEO. This is going back to the Health and Mission days, which is a site we used to run many, many, many years ago. And we saw what people were opting into our email list, and we saw what affiliate offers people were really buying, because we had all the conversion data from the platforms there. And so we focused in our efforts on what was doing well there to create our own product in that space. So it's kind of like a free way to test out or to validate different topic ideas.
Yeah, we collect emails, promote an affiliate offer, multiple affiliate offers, see which ones make sales, and then make something in right down that alley, sell directly, get 100% of the money, basically. You can still do that today pretty easily.
In 2024, if you're doing a course, it pretty much has to be video, right? That's the expectation these days. And a lot of people get put off by that because they've never made a video. They're not a YouTuber. They're like an old school marketer. Maybe they have an email list, a blog. They're familiar with that. But the leap to video is not actually as big as you might be thinking. The technological barriers there are as low as they've ever been. The iPhone these days is amazing at recording video, actually better than a lot of cameras from 4 or 5 years ago. The microphone on your MacBook Pro these days is really not that far off a professional sort of studio microphone. So if you're worried about the correct studio setup and all that, it doesn't need to be great to get started with. You can do it with just your phone, software like Loom even, and a decent mic of some sort would be my recommendations.
And you can do it if you're not a native speaker as well, because I know a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not a native speaker, etc. I've done it. Like, I'm literally the nation that's like, I'm from the nation that speaks the least English in the world. So it's like, you can figure that out.
And people have that same question, like if they're creating written content, they're like, oh, I'm not a native English speaker. Things like accents and stuff come out a lot more in video. So people are like, oh, but like, you're the perfect example of that, Gil. Like, you don't give a shit. Like, really, you're just like, as long as you have something cool to say, the methodology and the production quality and all that, it's nice to have. But it doesn't matter as long as the thing you're providing, the value you're providing is good.
And hosting courses has never been so easy as well. There's so many platforms that now let you host this. Like, you don't need much tech. Like, I remember when we did our first member areas, etc. Like, you had to set up some crazy custom WordPress and access rights, multiple tools that work with each other and would break. Now you can use tools like Circle, Thinkific, Teachable, etc. They all have plans around like 50 bucks to get started, basically.
And a really great support as well. So if you're not tech savvy, like, they will walk you through and handhold you through everything, really. So basically what we're saying is the technology is not a barrier.
It's so
in
easy
the same
now.
Way that it used to be.
Yeah, and I want to talk about books as well. I think if you want to learn how to put a good offer together, like, we can't really break it down, etc., but I really liked $100 Million Offer by Alex Hormozi. I think it's very good. I don't like his second book, so I'm not a big Hormozi fan for everything, but I think the first book was very good. And I think Russell Brunson, his trilogy, like Dotcom Secrets, Expert Secrets, and Traffic Secrets, also very good into getting you into the mind of, like, how do I put an offer together that converts well. A perfect webinar. I've made lots of money with that training, for example. Very, very good.
And yeah, his stuff's great. Yeah.
Most of it is in the book. Like, you don't need to buy expensive trainings. Like, we're talking like $10 ebooks. So yeah, it's like, that shouldn't stop you if you're not sure exactly how to do that. But we're going to talk about the sales page a little bit. The thing is, like, in terms of how you present the value, it's like, we like to put, basically, you can't just give a course and nothing else. You need to put like a course together, but then you need to kind of have like bonuses and modules. So usually bonuses will be like, you know, templates, there will be cheat sheets, there will be checklists, there will be things like that, so that people feel like they're getting a big package together. So they're getting a course, but they're also getting that extra template, that extra interview, that extra checklist, etc. And quite often people are more excited about the bonuses and the stuff you put next to the course than what you put together. And the idea is to assign a monetary value to each of these items. And essentially, like, it should be worth a lot more than you're charging for. So it's like you put a monetary value in terms of like what it's worth to a business or to someone that you help, like if they actually implement that and they actually get the results. And then if it's good enough, people are going to be pretty impressed. Now, in terms of building sales pages, a lot of people think you need some kind of like special software or whatever to build sales pages, etc. I've built multiple seven-figure sales pages just on WordPress with GeneratePress and GeneratBlocks. That's the stack we actually recommend in the courses as well, so nothing to change here. You don't need anything else. You have everything. It's all about just structuring it the right way. There's actually an event. If you're like a Platinum member, I'm actually making an event, like on-screen event on how to build sales pages in a few weeks. But I'll give you the main sections that you actually should be having on your sales page that pretty much always works. First one is the hero section. So the headline is always the same formula for me. It's like how to solve X problem, even if main objection. So how to lose weight, even if you have a sweet tooth. How to be the best paintball player, even if you just have one leg. Whatever, you know, something like this. Like, just not, obviously not if you have one leg, but what would be the main objection like people would say if they're not good at paintball? Like, even if you don't aim very well, or even if like, and it's like the headline always works. So just pick that. It's the best way to start. After that, you can A/B test if you want to do something else. So you need to have that. You need to, usually we use bullets to give kind of like a quick idea of what's inside. We put an image on the right that essentially shows what the product is or illustrates something that around the idea of that. And we put a call to action button that tends to scroll down to the pricing section that we're going to talk about in a second. Then we have the problem section. So people tend to, when they build sales pages, like directly sell, like they directly put the product in front of you. It works for software. I think for software, you can kind of like condense that. But when you're selling info products, it tends to be better to take some time to expose the problems people are having. So let's say in this case of the weight loss, for example, I'd be like, okay, well, maybe you've tried 60 diets in your whole life and you've regained the weight you've lost every time and you felt miserable when you were taking diets. That's because, and then you just find reasons why people do that. Like you didn't have a structured plan. You didn't have a follow-up. You didn't have a community to support you. You didn't have all of that, etc. Like you kind of like highlight why people may have felt slash why the problem is such an issue for people and what the consequences are going to be if they don't solve it. Then you share your journey to solution. Usually when you sell a product, you have solved the problem yourself. So you tend to share your journey to solution or the journey of someone that you've helped to solution. So Sandra had the same problem. She had tried, you know, the keto diet, the paleo diet, etc. And she couldn't make it work. She looked the same 10 years later. And by implementing a very simple intermittent fasting schedule, where she was only fasting for 12 hours a day, here's the result before, after, for example. That would be like a journey to solution. Then I would introduce the product. I'd be like, okay, if you want the same result as Sandra, we've put everything together into one convenient package that you can get. And then I would just have a pack shot. That's what we call that. That's what it's called in advertising, basically. Some kind of image that represents what you're going to get, together with a list of everything that's included inside without details, right? Then we have a section on features and benefits. So the thing that people tend to have is like, they tell you like, oh, there's 20 videos. But 20 videos is not very appealing. Like, I don't want to watch 20 videos. I just want to lose weight, right? So it's like, if I could lose weight without watching 20 videos, that'd be better, no? So it's more like about what these videos bring in terms of benefit. So you put the benefit as the main headline. So the headline would be like, get results quickly. Our program is only 20 videos, unlike competitors' program that require you to spend so much time studying the material, etc. For example, the benefit is faster results because you have less time studying, more time doing something else. Another feature, benefit rather, would be, let me think, like maybe social proof. So you can be using something like, hundreds of people have had results already, like your turn now, for example, something like this. So it's like, it's all about finding the features of what you have with what you're selling and putting essentially the benefit as the main headline to catch people and then lead into the feature on how you achieve that benefit when you explain that. That's how
it's kind of like some of the reverse of writing a product review.
Yeah, it's the opposite. But like it's so you catch people with what they get, and then if they're interested in the benefit, then they will read the section below, basically. And so I tend to make these things quite scannable. So I tend to have a layout with like a two column section where there's like the paragraph on one side and an image that represents the benefit on the other side. And I just alternate them, right? So it's like text is here, image is here, then text is on the right, and then image is on the left, etc. So it breaks down visually as well. People just pick the headlines they want to read and read that, because people rarely read entire sales pages. It's very long. Then after that, I do a section on what's inside, and it's like a proper breakdown, you know, like kind of table of content type thing with what's inside each module, what's inside each thing, etc. That's where I also include the bonuses. So the bonuses are kind of highlighted in a different color, something like this, so people understand that they're outside of the course. Then we have the pricing section. So the pricing section, actually, I borrowed that from Russell Brunson. I basically make what we call a stack, where I highlight every single item that is included. So 20 videos, cheat sheets, templates, community, calls, whatever you put in there, with the monetary value in front of each item, so that I can add it up to a big number, basically. And then cross that number and say, well, you only pay this much. This is discounted by this much, basically. So that gives people the impression that they're getting a really good deal doing that. Following the pricing right after, we always put the guarantee. So guarantee is usually 30-day money-back guarantee or 60-day money-back guarantee, like whatever you're offering, just to reassure people, like they know the price now, and you want to tell them, look, it's going to be fine. And then we just throw testimonials and an FAQ and a final call to action. So that's pretty much my default structure for the sales page. I would throw some stuff like in other sections sometimes, but I mean,
the thing I say about a sales page, right, is you can 80-20 it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people think, oh, it has to be this perfect thing. And they look at, you know, companies that have been doing it for 10 years and how polished some of their material is, and they go, oh, I can never create something like that. But like, don't look at that. Go back and look at what those companies' sales pages used to look like. You know, our ones when we first started out, they weren't great. They were very bare bones, but they communicated. They communicated the core things, and that is what matters. And I know if you're watching this podcast, you think, why are we getting the Facebook ad stuff? Well, we're kind of already there, because this stuff is what makes the difference in Facebook ads these days versus things like the targeting, which we'll get
because
onto.
Because Facebook ads are so easy that it's all about where you send people, actually. I think we should probably have said that before.
And before we get into the targeting, though, I do want to talk about price points and kind of funnel structure and setup, because that's also very important. And I want to talk about what's working now in 2024. There is this concept of impulse buy territory, which can be somewhere between sort of $30 and $200. It tends to be higher for a B2B product, lower for a B2C product. Think, you know, if you want to learn how to cook a steak, you're probably not going to just drop $200. $200. But if you're going to, you know, learn how to invest and make money, you know, you see it as an investment, then that could be higher. Or if you want to, you know, like do something for your business, then, you know.
Real estate again, as well, for example, lots of opportunities. Like, yeah.
For sure. And the impulse buy territory price, we're talking about the amount of money people spend. And the amount of money people spend and the first price that people see are two different things. Think about it when you're taking a flight. You might go to Skyscanner or Google Flights. You search in where you want to go and you see all the price. You think, oh, that's the cheapest one. You go through. However, by the time, you know, you add in the seat you want, the priority boarding, which you have to do now in Europe, if you want to take a larger carry-on, they've sort of tied that together. Yeah. All these types of extra things that they throw at you, you know, the insurance, the fast track, the extra bags, they probably charge you for kid seats and things like that now. I don't know. But the amount of money they're potentially getting out of you is higher than the first price you saw. And the same thing happens, or the same thing should happen with your funnel. So that's why we'll have order bumps and upsells as part of this. If you don't know what an order bump is, it's product that you can opt in for when you're checking out for another product. So if you go and buy a course on how to invest in real estate, when you get through to the cart, just as you're about to put your credit card details in or your PayPal, there'll be a little box that says, oh, would you also like to join this live seminar, and we'll teach you how to invest in this other type of product or whatever. And literally that's all it is, a sentence or two and a tick box. And the idea is that you can get about 30 to 40% of people ticking that box and increasing the average order value of your product.
It's a lot more than you think. A lot of people take it.
Why is it important to do this? Because the higher you can increase your average order value, the more you can spend to acquire a customer. So your ad, it's easier to run profitable ads. So we want to have an impulse buy product which has the potential to make us more money at the same time. And that's why when we get into doing upsells, this can really be where people kind of make their profit. This is their profit maximizer. There's different ways to do it. You can have an immediate upsell to something a little
What's
bit
What's an upsell? Explain to people. Some people might not know.
So if you don't know what an upsell is, after you have entered your card details, you clicked purchase, you think, okay, let me check out my product. There'll be a video or a page where they're like, here's everything, your order's on its way to you, but we just want to give you this one-time special offer where you can get a much bigger product usually for, you know, often a discounted price or with extra bonuses, or there's some kind of scarcity-based thing to make it appealing to buy at that point in time. Again, the idea here is that a percentage of people will click that button and will take the extra things you have to sell. And it can really increase the average order value when you do that. Some people do it right at the point of purchase. It's also possible to do it afterwards. So maybe after people have been through your course or after a certain amount
couple
of time.
Days, yeah.
Or even, you know, a lot of people now calling up people. They have sales teams that...
Don't scare people off.
Yeah, I know when I say that, like
people are like, I used to do SEO, now I have to call people.
I don't want to call people. I know. But I'm just saying, like, people are doing it, and it's not like a cold sales thing. It's more like it's kind of like a warm sales, kind of customer success, if you're familiar with it, with that term, where you're trying to help people get the most out of their product, and then casually mention that you have this other thing as well that they might be interested in. And, you know, again, certain percentage of people are going to go for that. So all of this is about making money and about increasing the average order value while still having a product that you can sell front end that appears to be in that sort of impulse buy territory window.
I want to say this stuff is the most important. Putting this offer together with the order bumps, the upsells, etc., it's 90% of the work. Like, everything else is easy if you do a good job here. So it sounds boring because it's like more business stuff. You're not clicking, you know, like you're actually like, you have to come up with something a little bit more intangible, but like that's really like the big winners are going to be made there.
And then once you've done that, the actual ads are pretty easy. So there's two or three elements to ads that we're going to talk about. The first is ad targeting. And what we talked about earlier about Facebook getting so good at knowing who's going to purchase your product, it's gotten to the point where you don't really need to do much at all in the way of targeting. 3-4 years ago, you used to have to say, oh, like, I want people from these countries who like this and who have this interest.
And you really,
yeah, specify a lot of things about someone before Facebook would be able to find you good buyers. Now a lot of people are doing campaigns where it's just like, target everybody on Facebook and optimize for the goal of a conversion. For cold traffic, you can also do lookalike, which is where you feed Facebook data about who's purchasing your product, and then it will try and find people who are lookalike those people. So back in the day, it was people who used to like similar things, but it's now Facebook's much more sophisticated. So people who, it just knows people who are going to behave the same way as these people because they interacted
with kind of scary,
various
actually.
Elements across platform. Yeah, it's crazy what they know about you. We won't go down that route, but there's also this concept of advantage lookalike, which a lot of people do these days, which is not just people who look similar to the people who are purchasing your product, but kind of one step beyond that as well. So this really increases the potential size of a cold traffic campaign while allowing you to still find people who are likely to buy your product. So we use a lot of that at the moment. There's another stage beyond that, which is called Advantage Plus Audience, which takes that kind of one rung further, and it's really going very broad. We're not there yet. That's more when you get past a certain scale. But yeah, the days of fine targeting and tweaking are gone really on Facebook.
And if you do that, it's a bad idea. Like, it's better to give Facebook a larger audience and let them do the crazy AI stuff they do with finding the right people and trying to outsmart the system. Like, most, I started like that. I was trying to read, like, there's no way. I know better. Like, I know my audience. I know my product. I know all of that. Like, they don't know. And I was trying to, like, micro-target everything, and it's like, I would rarely get profitable. When you let it go and you just, You need to have some conversion data, though. Otherwise, it's a bit difficult. So I think early on, it might be a bit more expensive to get conversions. But once it gets rolling, because Facebook gets some wins, basically, by identifying who is buying, then that's great. And that's where your organic traffic is extremely valuable, because you have your Facebook pixel on your thank you page when people buy. That's how people identify who bought. And they don't just do it based on Facebook ads traffic. They do it based on all your traffic, which means if you have an email list, if you have organic traffic that buys, if you have all that, you're feeding that data to Facebook that then learns from it and finds more people on Facebook through their ads to make more sales for you.
So it reduces the cost of your ads. It increases the potential number of people that you can sell to significantly.
And it makes starting easier, because like the hardest part is getting your first few conversions. It might cost quite a bit to get started if you do it with Facebook ads, but if you're able to generate that through organic channels, then this synergy is like killer. And that's why you can even beat like pure paid marketers if you kind of mix both, because you feed data that they don't have to Facebook that costs them a lot of money if they want to acquire it through ad channels. So that's kind of the power of doing both, of being both a creator and a business.
And speaking of kind of using your existing audience, your organic traffic to feed data into it, the second type of campaign you should be doing is a warm traffic campaign or retargeting campaign. And this is typically a smaller budget, something between like a third and half of what you spend on cold, obviously, you know, depending on what where you're at in the scale. But this is essentially anyone who's visited your site in the last 6 months or so, which obviously if you've got a lot of organic traffic, you can target all of these people. Anyone who's engaged with you on Facebook or Instagram, you can upload lead lists. So you can take your active campaign or whatever email platform you're using, literally upload the list of emails directly into Facebook, create an audience for it. Some tools, ActiveCampaign lets you create dynamic custom audiences. So whenever someone gets to a certain part of your email sequence, it could be simply opting in, it'll automatically add them into that custom audience. And you can retarget these people with very, very cheap Facebook ads. The warm traffic retargeting ads are essentially free money if you're selling any kind of digital product, anything really, because these are the warmest types of people who already know you, they're familiar with your product, they're probably close to buying already, and these ad campaigns are really just pushing them over the edge. Similarly, if you're running a cold campaign, that is also building up your warm audience, because think about it, people engage with that, they're engaging with you on Facebook. If they click on to your sales page, they're on your site, they're now in your warm campaign, and your warm campaign can really hit them harder, because the amount of people in that audience can be much lower. And okay, the budget's lower, but you know those people are seeing the ads more often than
it's not just if they click to your site, though. It's like if you run video ads, you can retarget people who watch a certain percentage. So you can see people who watch more than 50% of the video, for example, they're in my retargeting campaign, and they're going to see your ads a lot more often. So it's like there's kind of like a self-selection process of like people who skip your video, they don't get retargeted, you don't invest a lot in them. People who show interest by watching your videos, they end up in your essentially more aggressive ad campaigns because they're closer to conversions, and you monetize your cold traffic better, basically.
It's so profitable to do retargeting that there are like micro businesses that basically exist. They go around and they find companies who are not doing retargeting, and then they just offer them to set up a simple retargeting campaign. And like 100% of the time, you can make money out of it, basically, because it's so the cost per sale, cost per lead, cost per whatever action you're trying to get is so low, because you're essentially providing the audience to Facebook and saying, hey, I know exactly who's here and who you should advertise.
When someone comes to me and asks for like business advice, like that's the number one thing I tell them to do. It's not SEO, it's not any of that. It's like set up your retargeting on both Google
and
on Facebook.
It's literally free money. Like there's no simpler way of saying that. But if you're not doing that and you have something you sell,
if you have organic traffic, it's where you should start as well, because you can retarget people who went on your site, etc. You don't need to do anything. And also, it's a really good kind of like synergizing thing to do with posting a lot on Facebook and Instagram, because anyone who engages with your organic content enters your retargeting campaign if you want as well. So if you're like an active Instagrammer, if you like post stories, or if you post on Facebook pages and you do what a lot of people are doing in the industry right now, and you can sell a product, it's kind of like a winner, because you can post content, you can get that extra organic reach because platforms are essentially pushing your content past your followers. people who engage, you can say, okay, now show them my offer. And what is really good is you don't need clicks to site for your organic post. Like, you don't care. People don't need to click anywhere. And so it's very easy to get lots of reach because platforms tend to like reduce the reach of posts with links. So you don't have to worry about that anymore. You just get reach, get people engaged that are in your market, and then you let your retargeting ads do all the conversion and making money for you while your organic page is just here to engage people. It's so much cleaner as a system rather than trying to drive traffic from the organic posts, actually.
And just in terms of budgets then, so you know, you should start something around $100 to $200 per day, as I said, about two-thirds cold, one-third warm.
Can you start with less?
You can, but if you're going in this fresh, no data or very little data, it takes like a couple of weeks of that for Facebook to really learn exactly who to send, because it's going to test a bunch of stuff automatically. Yeah, yeah. Its algorithm's going to be figuring out. And so it's very normal in the first few days that, you know, you'll have a lot of conversions and no conversions and then a lot of conversions, and then just takes a bit of time.
I would argue
you do have to spend a bit of money there.
That if you have organic traffic and you can drive some conversions with your email list, etc., you could start with less, especially if you just start with retargeting and warm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like, for the longest time, we basically only did warm traffic Facebook ads, and they've always been profitable, wildly profitable. So, you know, if you can feed that data to Facebook, to Meta, then it's going to make when it comes to targeting cold traffic that much easier, because you can start doing lookalike audiences from day one, and it'll start there. It'll know who's going to convert, and then it'll sort of go in kind of concentric circles.
I'm thinking like the Facebook page guys, right? The people who are doing that already, like, let's say they're posting regularly, they're getting engagement, like, they could run a warm campaign to these people to a product. And probably like $20 to $40 a day is probably good enough to get started, I think.
Oh, easily. Yeah, I mean, it depends on the price points of all the products and things like that. But the thing is, right, you know, once you start making money with this,
it doesn't matter.
You suddenly have not an infinite money machine, but a machine where you put in $1 and you get out two or three, then, you know, you're very quickly going to keep feeding more money into that. And of course, you're going to reach limits with that. It doesn't infinitely scale. But in the beginning, it's not like SEO where you have to wait 6 months, a year before you start making any money back from it. This can happen in a day or two. So it's the cycle is a lot shorter there. One thing which affected Facebook ads really badly a few years back, you probably read about this, but iOS 14 came out. 14.5? I can't remember. I wasn't using iOS at the time, but they had this like enhanced privacy. Apple called it privacy. I think it was like an anti-Facebook campaign that they were doing. Probably a little bit of both. But essentially, if you have iOS, use Facebook app, you've probably seen that pop-up come up at the start that says, oh, do you want to allow Facebook to track you across everything you do? And the like option is ask app not to track, or like, yes, allow it to track everything I do and see everything I'm doing. And like, it's not quite that, but they make it more appealing to click don't track. So obviously most people clicked don't track, and overnight Facebook lost a lot of its ability to know who you were relative to, like, for example, were you the same person that was in that warm audience? Because there's a lot of blockages of the data there, and the targeting became really bad. A lot of people stopped running Facebook ads for a while they're trying to figure that out. That problem, while it hasn't entirely gone away, it's gotten a lot better. So Facebook have something called the Conversions API, which I don't know exactly how this works, but there's some kind of connection between your website and Facebook, and it's passing some kind of semi-anonymized data back in a way that allows Facebook to track who's converting on your site and who's visiting your site better, as far as I understand.
Sounds like magic.
It's literally like Facebook is a bit of a black box with some of this stuff. And I'm sure there'll be people that will be better able to explain how this works than me. But all you need to know is that it largely solves the tracking issues, like, let's say 80%, to the point where it all works again.
I think they've also done a better job at just targeting the right people with ads, which kind of like offset that issue as well of them tracking less well when you leave.
For sure. And for cold traffic, they're so good at that. This relates often to like warm traffic. So what happens for a lot of our customers who have already bought, you know, AH Pro, AH Pro Platinum, is they'll see an ad for one of our other products, which is included in their in the bundle, so to speak. And they're like, oh, why are you advertising that? That was included. Well, it's not. It's because you either like don't use the same email on Facebook as you did when you signed up for our product, or
you have some privacy stuff.
You clicked all these things. So that is the effect of saying no to that. So don't say no to that. No, it's fine. Like I said no to that myself. Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about creatives.
So let's talk about creatives. Because this is really where the ad game
is.
A creative is an ad. So it's a static ad.
It's the content.
It's the text. It's a video. Very important these days. It's the content of your ad. And that is really, really the only thing you can do on Facebook to optimize well. Because, again, a couple of years ago, you would do all the targeting settings and that made a big difference. Now everyone has more or less the same targeting settings. And so it's all in the creative these days. The good news is that creatives are not actually that difficult to create, especially given tools like Canva, if you want to do static creatives, even doing video creatives these days, it's pretty straightforward. I'd say it's easier to do that than it is to do like a YouTube video or a podcast. I'll break down a standard video creative, and this is the kind of format that we've used. When we were researching for this, I looked at hundreds of other companies and kind of tried to take the best bits of what everyone was doing and take some insights there. So it all starts with a hook. The purpose of this is really stop the scroll. A lot of people are doom scrolling through Facebook, Instagram, whatever. And you need to have some kind of pattern interrupt where you're just stopping that. And people are like, oh, I'm paying attention. Well, something different here. Something as simple as like waving your arms around can work a lot. So that's why you see a lot of ads start with like rapid movement, or even something completely unrelated to the ad, like a guy just going around the room on a hoverboard. You're like, wait, what? There's some very mundane things these days. A guy driving his car and the camera's just over there just looking like, oh, are you into email marketing? Da, da, da. It's like, why is this guy in his car talking about email marketing? That is probably the most important part of the entire ad, because it gets people to actually watch your ad. So what people will do is they will create multiple different hooks for the same ad, and the rest of the ad will be the same, and they'll just test out different hooks. And you'll quickly see kind of what works and what doesn't, and Facebook will allocate the spending itself. You don't even have to control it. It'll just do it automatically. After that, what we do is a kind of like pass problem, agitate, solution framework. And this is, it can simply be like a sentence or two for the entire thing, or a sentence for a problem, a sentence to agitate it, and a sentence for the solution.
Can you give an example?
Okay, so let's go to the example of I'm trying to cook a steak, right? The problem is it's difficult. And if you don't know what you're doing, you end up with it being burnt on the outside or raw on the inside.
You wasted
and,
a lot of money.
You know, you've got that hot date and, you know, you're trying to impress them, and it's you know, you're embarrassed, or, you know, yeah, you spend a lot of money on a really nice piece of meat. And
a man should know how to cook a steak.
You can't cook it. Exactly. So that's kind of the problem. You're also agitating it. You could do, as you said, you do all that in the same sentence.
Yeah.
And then you introduce a solution until you see this 7-step framework that anyone can do, even if you've never lifted a pan or cooked anything in your life before. So that's kind of alluding to the fact that there's a solution, and people will also be interested and say, oh, I want to hear more about this. What is the solution? How is it going to work? How much is it? What's it going to do for me? Then we have a sort of like pattern interrupt again. So before we provide them with that result, we tell them about who we are. So what are our credentials? And this is very important for cold traffic, because you're affirming why someone can trust you. So that can be like the experience you have, any kind of qualifications, accolades, social proof. And again, with video, it's really good because you can show if you've done like, you know, presentations, or you're on YouTube and you have a videos there, you can show clips from that. Anything that shows that you can be trusted, even just a little bit, will help in this situation. Then next part of it is going to be expected results. So what will this product specifically do for you, the end user, the customer? Similar to how you do with your sales pages, Gail, we start to touch on the features and benefits relationship a little bit here. Just for context, our videos are somewhere between like a minute and a half in total. So this is super condensed, and you really only need to say like, you know, one or two key things in each point that I'm saying here. Next, there'll be a what's inside section. And again, it's usually one sentence. So, you know, a complete solution to cook a steak, including a full timeline for every kind of meat, all the templates, all the cheat sheets for what to buy in the butcher.
Spices for your dates and things like this.
Yeah, you know, like all these types of things. But keep it short, keep it sweet, because you're not actually trying to make people buy just from the ad.
You're
trying
to get into
your sales page, and then your sales page is what actually sells.
You tease.
You're just trying to get the
click. You said like and three more things or something like this. Like it's like I feel like teasing could work as well.
We can try it. We haven't so far. We usually keep it short, and then we'll have some kind of promise or guarantee. So I'm a big fan of reducing the risk of people, especially when you're doing cold traffic ads, reducing the risk that if it's not everything that they ever imagined and everything that you promised, then they have an out. So some kind of refund guarantee or promise that this is going to work for them, or the money back or something like that, will just dramatically improve results. Even if you get a few people who buy it, you know, get the results and just refund it anyway, like it's the cost of doing business. Then you have your call to action, which is, you know, get people to
click on the link.
Yeah. So you want to finish off by directing people to do that.
Do you like point down or something? Do you gesture it?
No, because when you're doing creatives on Facebook,
they might go on the left or right.
You have this dynamic creative, is it called? Option, which is selected by default. So Facebook's AI will cut and chop all of your video, audio, imagery into loads and loads of different formats across all its platforms. It's pretty good, actually, knowing how to do that. Sometimes it gets a bit wonky, but they'll typically turn those off quite quickly. So if you're kind of pointing down, but then like the video is cut, you know, or it's like in a different layout, then it might be above you or
like
a different place. So I'd say click the link next to this video, or click the link to get started. Importantly, with your creative, don't mention pricing, because pricing is something you quite often test when you're running Facebook ads, when you're running any kind of info product, actually. And it's really hard when you've kind of hard-coded the pricing into your video. You have to go and re-record it again, then it looks a bit disjointed. Yeah, it's just annoying. So I wouldn't mention it there. It's also another reason people will click on the link to see what the pricing is. And even if they're not ready to buy at the moment, that then puts them back into your retargeting audience, which is cheaper to advertise to those same people. So again, another benefit of getting people to click on your ad. Okay, so the reason we start with video is because it's the most profitable type of ad you can run. Typically, your return on ad spend is about double for a video than it is to a static image. Not always the case, but typically that's been our experience. So I would always recommend starting there, because you're going to find out very quickly whether the product you're offering, the offer, is going to work with video. It's obviously easier to do image ads because, you know, you don't have to sit in front of a camera and do this stuff. But that means that gets a little bit more commoditized.
There's more people doing it, yeah.
Can do it as well. Everyone else has a Canva or a Midjourney account these days, and they can create pretty compelling looking static ads without too much effort.
I think it's a common thing in online marketing, right? The easier it is to do, the more competitive it gets, the less it works. You need to be willing to go to places where people are uncomfortable if you want to get the best benefits.
Absolutely. And a single video that does well can take a couple hours to do the script and film it and edit it. But then that could literally make you millions of dollars from one video. It's crazy. In terms of the types of static images, though, that work, a few concepts. It's like before and after. So like what were the, like our steak example, like a steak before this course and a steak after this course. And like, you know, a few features of each thing. That's like quite appealing. Features and benefits. So like a picture of the steak and kind of like pointing
little arrows
with like what the benefit is, what the feature of your course that's going to help them to achieve a different result. Something that works really well right now for some reason is post-it notes. So literally it's just like a top-down view of a desk with like often with a few just really odd objects that shouldn't be there, and then just a post-it note in the middle.
Don't say that.
That was something written on there. Nothing dodgy, really. Just like wait, why is there a like cell phone next to this I don't know, Ghostbusters merchandise or something?
You know what,
like
I see a lot these days, I see Apple Notes screenshot ads. This I guess is the same principle, and it works really well.
These are all like I don't know what the phrase is for it, but it's kind of like hyper casual ads almost, where it, like, it doesn't feel like an ad, but it's just like, oh, what's that?
No, it's like native content. It's like an organic. It looks like an organic post, and that's what people want.
If you think about TV commercials, even now, but especially, you know, from the 90s, if anyone else is
haven't
as old
seen
as us,
any for a long time.
It's like very overproduced and like a little bit cheesy, and people are just, they put up a front whenever they see that. So a lot of the things that work really well on Facebook are when you're kind of getting under the radar a little bit with your ads, and like people don't realize it's an ad until they're kind of already there. And then you have that reaction like, oh, this is actually quite good for an ad. I should pay attention to it. Statistics ads work really well. Us versus them ads and before versus after. Yeah, I mentioned that one already in terms of creative. But honestly, just throw random ideas that look very different from each other. Like forget about trying to have them all your brand colors or anything like that. Almost like the more different they can be from each other, the better. We'll put some of the ones that we've been using recently up on the screen as B-roll for this show. So you see that if you're watching over on YouTube. But yeah, that's kind of it. Like that's our Facebook ads formula. And it's been working really, really well for us recently.
Yeah, people have been asking like, oh, what are you guys doing now? Google is changing, et cetera. Like that's one of our big points of focus, really. I really like the idea of aligning our incentives with the big platforms with all these big AI changes. It's like, they might replace some free content with AI because they can and they make more money or whatever, but they will not replace advertisers. And so the idea of like shaping your business around the same incentives as these platforms, I think it's a really great factor of stability. Yes, it requires a little bit of money to get started and it requires some setup because setting up an offer is not something you're going to do in 2 hours, but it's probably something that will pay dividends for the people who pick that route over just trying to pigeonhole the exact same stuff they used to be doing into a different platform, which I see a lot of people are doing right now. And I'll be honest, I'm a little bit concerned of what's going to happen to these people when these platforms make big changes. So it's like, while it's kind of okay right now, and I know Facebook pages are doing quite well right now, etc. You know, see you in a year and a half and let's see where we're at and we'll see if I was right or wrong. But my gut feeling, especially because it happened in 2013 already, is that it's a dangerous game to play, especially as people go towards smaller platforms like Pinterest as well, for example, which just don't have that much traffic. And if your site is not an amazing experience, it's going to be seen as a negative to the platform, basically. So that's pretty much it. If you have any questions, feel free to drop them on the comment section on YouTube. Maybe like we'll go, like usually we don't spend a lot of time on the comment section, but I think for this episode we should. So here's the deal. 48 hours after the episode is out, we just spend an hour going through the comments. And if you guys have any questions, we'll go and answer them there. And so we'll be happy to tell you more about that. And if you want us to talk more about funnels, products, etc., let us know. We know people want to hear about new solutions and we're going to share what we do and how we do it, basically. So
yeah, this is really just scratching the surface of this whole space. I mean, it goes much broader and much deeper.
This was really a basic level one episode. We can go deeper on a lot of these things. Even the sales page, I could do a whole episode on that. So yeah, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to subscribe and review the podcast as well, because we're looking for reviews. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks for another episode. Bye-bye.